Real College Podcast is presented by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and is a production of Radio K.
You're listening to Real College Podcast, and once again, I am your temporary host, Alex Schumacher. This week, we continue right where we left off last week with more personal essays. This week, many of our essays center around the theme of identity, who we are, how we got here, and what it means to be me. All that and more starts right now on Real College Podcast. Being gay, it's something many of us are, like me. Also, Real College Podcast reporter Chris. But realizing that you're not in fact straight like you'd been told, but are instead a flaming homosexual is not always an easy journey, and for some, the process of coming out can be even harder. For Chris, though, it ended up being a funny experience.
From the humble age of 12, I knew I was interested in guys. I would always be staring at them, more so than girls. I would always have a desire to be closer to boys. However, I went to a Catholic elementary and middle school, so therefore, I was not really exposed, nor even knew what it meant to be gay. So as I entered public high school, I was still in the mindset that being gay was something I was not. I literally remember telling myself that I just had this weird attraction towards guys. It's called being a homosexual, Chris. I never was personally against it. I simply never really thought about it, probably out of fear of realizing that I was indeed gay. Jump forward to around halfway through my junior year, and I had started to come to terms with the fact that I might be attracted to men as a serious concept. That summer, I had come out to a few of my close friends as bisexual. But for some reason, I didn't really feel totally content with that. In retrospect, it was fairly obvious, but I was so terrified of what people would have thought if I told them I was gay. In my life, being gay or even being a part of the community was something that was not really ever talked about, and if it were, it had some negative connotations. But as I was finally accepting myself, I remember driving around with my best friend, Emma. We were both in relationships at the time, and we spent hours just driving and talking about how unhappy we were in said relationships. I knew this was my opportunity to tell her I was gay. I felt so many knots in my stomach, and I was so nervous to even tell my best friend, the person that I went to with all of my other problems. I explained to her that I had been feeling really unhappy because I wanted to explore this attraction towards guys. Obviously, she was super supportive, and she told me that I needed to be selfish. I needed to stop worrying about the repercussions that coming out would bring and focus on what will make me happy, which was dating guys. Eventually, after a few days of pondering, I ended the relationship with the girl after 10 months. It really sucked for both of us, but it needed to happen. Once again, fast forward a few months, and I met this boy, Devin, in my choir class. He was also gay. In the interim of my relationship with the girl and him, I found myself staring at Dev in class and wanting to be closer to him. And by some grace of whatever deity you believe in, he messaged me one day, and my heart nearly flew out of my body. We proceeded to go on a date, and then another, and then several more. One day, one fateful day, my parents left the house to go to an event, and I presumed that they would be gone for a few hours. So, I invited Dev to come over. I wasn't out to my parents at this time, so I had to be low-key and have him over in secrecy. He arrived at my house, and to our surprise, we were both wearing the same pair of green joggers that we have. Keep that in mind for the rest of the story. I had this feeling that my parents were going to find out about me having Devin over. I'd had him over before without telling my parents, but this time felt different. I felt something in my gut telling me that they were going to find out about this, but I ignored it, figuring I was just being paranoid. And boy, was I in for a surprise. Anyway, we finally decide that we should leave, so I go upstairs to my room to put on a different pair of pants. As I'm walking up the stairs, I hear the door open. It was my mom. She had forgotten something at the house, so my parents ran back home to get it. Dev was frantic, and I the same, so I panic and tell him to hide in my room. I locked him in my room and attempted to collect myself to go talk to my mom. As I'm being the A-plus actor that I am, she asks if anyone's over. Naturally, I said, "What? No." And by some miracle, she believed me. Until she walked into the front hall, and there it was. All the incriminating evidence. Devin's shoes, his coat, his car keys. This was the end, I think to myself. Bamboozled again. She asked me whose stuff that was, if there was no one here. Now, this was the moment where I had to devise a plan. You have to realize, I'm in fight or flight mode at this point. I could either give in and tell her the truth, or I could flee the country, change my name, and never look back. I chose the former, but with a twist. I told her my friend Devin was over, and she was angry that I lied to her and was assuming we were doing some wild teen things or something to that degree. So, in an attempt to calm her down and reduce the sentence that I was about to face for lying to her, I blurted out, "I like him." She was not shocked, because no one is when I tell them that I'm gay. Bamboozled. Once again. She told me to make Dev go home and that we'll talk about it when she gets back. After this, I was a ball of emotion because I just came out to my mom in a really, really idiotic way. And I was still getting in trouble. I'd heard all these really happy coming out to your parents stories, and mine just turned into a huge mess. Such is my life, though. After this, I very rarely brought Devin back to my house because it was too anxiety-inducing and probably just a bad idea. And that was how I came out to my parents. Poorly, but entirely my fault.
If you were gay, that'd be okay. I mean, cause hey, I'd like you anyway. Because you see, if it were me, I would feel free to say that I was gay, but I'm not gay.
Nothing can shake up our sense of identity more than a big move from somewhere that we love and are familiar with to somewhere entirely new. It can cause us to question every decision that led to us moving and make us look even deeper to wonder who we really are. Reporter Connor shares his story.
I'm about to knock on a complete stranger's door. My heart is leaping out of my chest. I'm getting awkwardly sweaty, the kind that only happens when I'm about to talk to people I don't know. I love it. This is for my internship with a local political campaign, something I have always wanted to do, and here I am doing it. How did I get here? 2 weeks ago, I was in Wisconsin and had never set foot in Minneapolis. How did I get here? I woke up extra early. Well, I wouldn't say woke up, more like actually got out of bed. I've been lying there all night, a captive to my restless mind, floating between sleep and a state of constant worry about starting anew. The incessant beeping of my alarm snapped me out of my state of limbo. And soon after a shower and a few frantic runs back into the house for forgotten items, I was on the road. This was it. I'm finally going to the school I wanted to years ago. On a side note, I'd settled for a cheaper, regional school in Wisconsin, but I grew restless after a few years and decided, what the heck? I'm already in debt, so what's a little more? So there I was, driving to Minneapolis, my new home. It rained on the drive. The staccato strokes of rain on my windshield put me in a rather meditative mood. It was then something big hit me. I was doing this alone. The last time I moved into a new college, it was a huge deal. My parents drove me right up to the doorsteps and spent hours fussing over me, helping me unpack every little item. And after I finally managed to get them to leave, of course, after a half-joking, half-real offer by my family to stay a couple nights in a hotel nearby to, quote, ease my transition, they still called me every day for 2 weeks. Now, I drove off to a new college without even so much as a good morning hug or a goodbye. With that, I drove on. The rain pattering away, music in my ears, some Gardetto strategically placed for snacking. And that sinking feeling that comes with growing old, becoming aware of it. Arriving at the apartment, I was excited. I am finally in the city I've dreamt about, and after a long and rather sweaty hour, I managed to cart my entire life up 6 floors and dump it into a massive pile in my new living room. Victoriously surveying the massive jumbled cardboard boxes, clothes, and childhood objects that I'll admit I'm still a little too attached to, I felt ready to start the new year. Looking out across the city from my room, I felt like I had finally found my place in the world. That would quickly change. It was only Wednesday, and I was already looking forward to the weekend like a freedom-crazed freshman, except I wasn't giddy with excitement for a weekend full of binge drinking. I was excited to get away from it all. to tuck my tail and run. I felt so confused, so lost. Every day, eating lunch alone, getting lost in a maze of underground tunnels, and sitting in my room, looking out the window longingly as groups of friends passed by laughing. What happened? I used to know who I was, where I should be. At my last school, I had my best friends. I had that study spot on the second floor of the library with those awesome comfy couches. I had a hipster coffee shop where everyone knew me by name. Now what? I'm alone. I don't know if my new degree is what I really want. I don't have regular status at a hipster coffee shop. On top of it all, I stepped in some gum. Now every step is sticky agony. Ugh. How could this place go from being the school of my dreams to somewhere I want to escape from so quickly? I decided I needed some help. So I Skyped my girlfriend. She's a lot wiser than me.
Hey.
Hey.
Listen, I know you're worried, but you aren't going to meet anyone if you don't get more involved on campus.
I know. You're right. Thanks for the advice.
No problem.
Bye.
Bye.
After talking to her, I felt a lot better. I knew she was right. No place is going to be home right away. I for sure wouldn't make any friends if I wouldn't get out there and join groups. So I took a chance. I walked into the Radio K studio, took a tour with a bunch of other cool people. I felt like it was a place I could belong. This was a place that had a vinyl closet I wanted to get lost in, studios I wanted to sleep in. There are comfy couches everywhere. And Super Smash Bros. In the break room? Maybe this could be home. A day later, drunk on the success of my first outing, I decided to try again. I had gotten an email about a human rights advocacy group on campus and decided to check it out. There I met a kid named Isaac, who eventually offered me an internship to work on a local political campaign. I couldn't believe it. This was something I always wanted to do. But was I really up for it? Doubt creeps in again. It was only 2 weeks in. Should I have just said no? Should I have taken my first semester easy so I could get my feet under me? I don't know. There I stood, about to make my first door knock. I stumbled over my script, taking a deep breath. I knocked. And I nailed it. To think that just 2 weeks before, I questioned if I should even be here. I questioned if I could make it at a big university. I wanted to stay inside, to not take any chances, because it was scary. Being a transfer student isn't easy. It's confusing. It's like being a freshman all over again, except you don't get put in a dorm with 30 people who are pretty much forced to be your friends. This wasn't my first time at a new school, but you better bet I was just as nervous and insecure as the first time around. It doesn't have to stay that way. Say yes to everything you can. You might just end up with the internship you always wanted. You might get some new friends. You might just end up knocking on a door. It's getting better all the time. I used to get mad at my school. No, I can't complain. The teachers would talk me when cool. No, I can't complain. You're holding me down. Oh. Turning me around. Oh.
Finally, for individuals who grow up biracial, they often feel like their identity is split in two. Split between one culture and another, split between how they see themselves and how everyone else sees them. Reporter Tiffany shares her and her friends' similar, yet different experiences in navigating their cultural identities.
I don't feel the need to always specify that I'm African American. Or African, a post-African American, or Black, or this. And so I don't even know. Like, when I go to check boxes, like, on a test, I'm like, I don't even know. This might be right.
As someone who is bicultural and hesitantly bilingual, there is little else more embarrassing than having to use Google to translate basic phrases from English to my mother's tongue. Well, maybe the only thing that can top that embarrassment is when I'm stammering red-faced in front of a native speaker in the attempt to choke out an answer or question. But it isn't a struggle unique to me. Perhaps a consolation I get out of this language-cultural limbo is that I'm not alone.
Hey, my name is Olivia Anazor, and I am half Nigerian and half Caucasian, Scandinavian, I don't know, half white.
When I was younger, my mom made an effort to get me reconnected to my roots when she enrolled me in a Vietnamese learning school nestled in a St. Paul Buddhist temple.
It was really interesting because I grew up in a predominantly white neighborhood, and my school is predominantly white too, so I just found myself with mostly white friends, and so I didn't consider myself white, but I just thought, oh, these are my people. And then it wasn't until like a little bit into middle school and high school when I started making friends with other Africans, and I was like, oh, this is so cool. It's different though, because they're two, I feel like I'm living kind of like a double life. Like I have my white friends and then I have my black friends, but like towards like halfway through high school, I realized that it's not two separate things and that, I mean, people are people.
Each class was taught by volunteer native speakers, uncles and aunties from the Vietnamese community with good intentions. And I grudgingly went into their care every Sunday. In retrospect, the coursework wasn't too hard if I had put in some work. But of course, I put in very little work and regretted it sorely during each exam. This instance sums up my effort to reach out to the other half of my identity fairly well. It was frustratingly difficult growing up with two identities and only feeling an affinity for one, while the rest of the world and my family saw that I had an obligation to both.
And so I kind of just feel like I was living a double life, even though that sounds super dramatic for somebody who lives in like a suburban like area. It's just, I don't know. I never felt like I fit in with the black people at my school because not all of them were Africans, and like that's who I identified the most with. And then I just feel like when I see things like on the news and stuff, and like I'm in my predominantly white area, I don't have like a place to fully speak my mind where I'm not, I feel like, going to be judged for it. But also that's because I'm super probably self-conscious just about like what people are always thinking of me, so.
Yet as time progressed, my tunnel vision widened just a little. I wanted to learn more about Vietnamese history, music, food, and politics. I wanted to reclaim the identity I tossed aside. I now feel a bitter wistfulness about all the miscommunications I've had with my parents due to language barriers. All the time I could have spent dedicating myself to understanding the vibrant and nuanced culture I took for granted growing up.
It feels like I'm not a true African if I don't know the language. And so I didn't hear it as much as at home as other people did, or like somebody with two African parents. Because like that's the people who I want to relate to are people who can speak the language. And I'd love to learn it. It's just, it's one of those things where I've gotten by with not knowing it, that it kind of feels weird now.
The feeling stems less from regret and more powerfully from a hope that I can be closer to this connection that I have.
When I went to Nigeria in seventh grade with my sisters and my dad, they were way more inclusive than I thought they'd be. Being surrounded by all my cousins who speak fluent Igbo, and my aunts, my uncles, my grandparents, and they're talking to my dad, and we're sitting there, my sisters and I, and we don't know 100% what they're saying. They would try to teach us that, which I thought was super cool, because I don't know, I would hope that I would be that patient with them if they like came here and they didn't know all, I mean, they speak great English too. It's just, if they didn't, I would hope that I would be that, you know, patient with them. So they were inclusive, but also there's that still that other aspect where you're the ones who don't know the language. So it kind of feels like if my mom were to go to Nigeria, I feel like we were like the white people in Nigeria. The ones who like, who are there because they, I don't know, they have a connection, but they're not Nigerian.
I'm trying to make up for lost time now by speaking to my family and strangers in the community in Vietnamese as much as possible, even when I'm left grasping for words, terrified of saying the wrong thing. But the awakening that motivated me to do more also opened my eyes to understanding another facet of my racial and cultural identity. Although I understand the sentiment behind the romanticized homecoming that my family has advocated about my return to Vietnam, I also understand that there is no reconnecting to my roots. The Vietnamese diaspora has only brushed up against me. I have always felt too American and sometimes felt guilty for it. But that is all I've known. And for me, that's okay.
It says, kachifo. I've totally Minnesota-ized the word, and I'm pretty sure it's pronounced kachifo with more African dialect. But it means good night in Igbo. Before my dad passed away, it was the last words that I said to him and that he said to me. And so it was a way to kind of just cement that, like, it means so much to me. It means Nigeria, which is a part of me. It means my dad, which is a part of me. So it really means a lot. I don't know how to just, let me see. It just means a lot to me. So if I say it to someone, I'm like, you know, I trust you with this sentiment that is a part of my family. So I hope to say it to my future husband and my future children and just keep it as like a familial thing that we always say.
Even if I have to learn about my mother's culture as a tourist, as an outsider, it's somewhere to start. I know someday I'll be able to walk freely across the bridge between Vietnamese and American without fear and without shame.
I tried to drink it away. I tried to put one in the air. I tried to dance it away. I tried to change it with my hair.
That's all for this week's episode of Real College Podcast. Thank you to all the reporters this week and last week for meeting with me one-on-one to build their stories and for putting in the time to make great, great pieces. Austin, Elizabeth, Audrey, Lou, Connor, Chris, and Tiffany, thank you all so much for working with me and for making me have an amazing first hosting experience. Thank you all so much for listening. You can hear more of our episodes at radiok.org/realcollegepodcast. You can also subscribe on iTunes, or you should definitely leave us a review, just because. RCP is a production of Radio K. It's produced by me, Alex Schumacher, Emily Allen, and Liv Briggins. Jacob Maldonado Medina is our host and managing editor. Thanks for listening, and tune in every Monday at 6:30 p.m. for more arts and cultural coverage, and come back next week to hear about the endless mysteries of love and desire. Yes, that is really what we're doing. Bye.